If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com. Hey, buddy. Justin here. My buddy, I mean everybody listening, because you're all my friends. You know who else is my friend? Tom Merritt. You might know him from Tech News Today, Sword and Laser, but he also does a podcast called FSL Tonight. With who? Me. That's who. It's a fictitious sports league comprised of all sorts of science fiction and fantasy characters. Now, that might seem a little confusing, but the good news is there's a video where we explain it. You can go on over to Kickstarter.com and just search FSL Tonight, and you'll come up to a page where we explain everything about the league. Oh, also it's on Kickstarter because we're having a Kickstarter. Our third season is going to be completely ad-free, and we got some really sweet perks if you are interested in this concept or already listen to the podcast. So head on over to Kickstarter, search for FSL Tonight, and back it if you want. If you don't, no sweat. Seriously, it's not a problem. Don't worry about it. It's very niche, you know. I'm not begging you for money here. Seriously, I am kind of, though. Please, give me money.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
And the underappreciated, always neglected, and forgotten, Mr. Justin Robert something. Oh, Young.
That's actually my full name. I'm gonna have, like, that's what, if I were a boxer, like, you know, like, boxers can have, like, 18 names, nicknames on their way to the ring, that would be all of mine.
Or just your actual names?
No, I just want Michael Buffer to read that. The underappreciated, always neglected,
the hardest working man on the Weird Things podcast, Justin Robert Young.
See, I don't even think that, like, me saying good things about myself is what I really want to do. I want to just have it all be about other people taking me down a peg. That's what, and being bitter about it.
Like,
that's
what?
My move.
I kid. You're a natural resource. National resource. A national natural resource.
He is an actual resource.
So, gentlemen, now that we're all here, there's a person in Tennessee whose name we don't have. There's a person in North Carolina whose name we don't have. But the names aren't important. Okay. What is important or interesting, each one of these people gets a check for $876 a year from the government.
So, all right. I'm sure it's because they provide a valuable service to the government.
We'll get to that in a moment.
All right.
We are going to say, we're going to play a guessing game of why they get this check. Okay. And before we start trying to do some sort of logical narrowing it down, which your two keen minds, I think, could probably get to it in just two questions and it'd be over and there'd be no fun.
Hermit crabs.
Yeah.
I want you to, yeah, step back a bit, and I want some plausible yet maybe out there explanations, because I guarantee you this is kind of an out there explanation. I would never have guessed this.
They own the mineral rights to heretofore undiscovered variation of palladium.
Government can be stupid. Maybe, yeah. Not that stupid.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
Maybe. I can be proven wrong on that.
I mean, because listen, there was a big news story this week about how the IRS spend a bunch of money on, like, a Star Trek parody.
Yeah, dude. $60,000.
So
yeah.
Like, maybe they're both, like, you know, they just provide, like, the government, the federal government gets a certain stipend of Spock ears every year, and they just manufacture those Spock ears.
You know what? Here's what I like. Maybe they were extras in that show, but they were union, so they have to get a check for $800 a year in perpetuity as long as that training video
It's $876 a year, Brian.
$876, yes. Sorry.
Dude, that's a good rate. If you're getting that in perpetuity.
Yeah.
But I guess they only screen it once a year. So that's a problem.
Well, what if it's like for all the new hires, right? So it's like, you know, it's $100 every session they have the new hires.
Oh, man, that'd be pretty good.
You know, I like to think that, like, Ernest Borgnine is still getting checks from, like, Airwolf when it airs somewhere in the world.
Well, okay, what else?
You have to, right? I mean, even if it's just, like, pennies. Like, you know, whenever like, HBO buys, like, some crappy B-movie, all the actors in that movie get... You know, the infinitesimal payout that comes along with it.
Yeah, that's like, I remember Randy showing me like his Happy Days check every now and then he'd get, and sometimes it'd be 73 cents and I have 85 cents in postage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's not residuals. Maybe it's more like a rental fee for something. Do these people own something that the government needs?
Monkeys.
Are these the people who run monkeys that need to be shot? It's monkeys that like to be shot into space are us. And it's like,
the guys who run monkeys just sounds like it's got a very interesting Urban Dictionary page.
I'm going to say these are professional dowsers and that they are being paid to find bombs for someone using dowsing rods. That seems like a very weird thing's explanation for this.
No, but it's even more kind of, you'd go, you hear it and you have to read the article twice because it's just almost, don't want to go too far.
Okay. It's hard.
Now I'm going to take it a step further.
More outrageous? All right.
It's not for something they did. It's for something one of their parents did.
Huh.
Oh, man. So who would be like... a hero to the federal government to the point where they would get paid out year after year? No, Brian, not the Capitol steps.
maybe they were censors in the past who did such a good job they get royalties for their children's. They're like,
Yes.
Like, those documents are still very censored. Oh, there's a lot that can't be
read. Are you talking about Jim and Jane Redactor?
Their marketing video says, that's redactulous. And then they're like...
Of the Tennessee Redactors?
Yeah, I'm trying... Okay, now I'm going to... You know what? I'm gonna start trying to hone in on this for reals.
Hone it. Hone it like you own it, baby.
I'm going to hone it like I own it. I'm going to say, first of all, do they get the money because of something they own? Is there an asset that yields?
It seems like legacy cash.
Yeah, I guess so. Something their parents did. Did their parents invent something, maybe?
No.
Did their parents
make love to something?
One would hope.
Did their parents maybe like fight a menace? And then they get, like, military benefits, and that's what these kids get?
I would say you are red hot, sir.
Wait, what did you say? I totally tuned you out thinking that it was gibberish.
I said their parents, like, fought some kind of battle, and so now they get, like, their kids get a military stipend. So, wait a minute.
Oh, my God. Are these, like, the guys that found Hitler's body?
No. No, no, no. It's got to be, like... Did their parents, like, what's that footage? You got footage of, like, a bunch of soldiers sitting cross-legged while they fire off a nuke in front of their face. Like, is it something like that?
No.
Hmm.
Did one of their parents get inside a refrigerator near a nuclear explosion, only for the refrigerator to be thrown a comical distance, and yet their father to be alive inside? Also, yeah, is one of them Shia
totally
LaBeouf.
Unrelated to why they get the check.
Okay. okay, I'm going to say, did they fight communists?
No.
Were they psychic Nazis. Soldiers?
Not that I know of.
Okay. They may have. They're just soldiers. But they were soldiers, right?
Yes.
Man, all right. They fight in Grenada?
Not for what they get the check for.
Okay. Wow. Let's see. Did it What branch of the military? Do we know? Army?
Not specified. Probably Army.
CIA?
No.
FBI? I'm going to keep you. Civil defense.
Army. Army. So no. Let's just rely on probably Army.
Okay. So they fought someone. Did this take place? Did their battle take place in the 70s?
No.
60s?
Yes.
So Vietnam era or late North Korean War, I think, ended late 50s, maybe early 60s.
The Korean War is over in Mad Men, which begins in 1959.
Okay.
And Don Draper.
So this is like when Justin and I get traveled back in time, this is how we'll reconstitute what's happening in the world around us because we'll recognize stuff from movies.
Just don't go by MASH.
Yes. Let's say they, man, it was in the Vietnam War, I assume.
No.
No.
Wait, you said that they weren't fighting against communists, though, right? Because it wasn't like a communist sympathizer kind of thing?
No.
They didn't out any Reds?
Man.
No.
All right, so it's something that belongs on the Weird Things podcast. They did it.
I'm going to say you made a huge, huge incorrect assumption. A huge one.
What was it that I said that you said I was red hot?
The battle of the soldiers thing. That was a
assumption. Okay. Wow. See, now I know I'm trapped in a dead end. That I'm
you like, are in the web, Mike.
I know.
Wait, hold on. Wait.
You just said 60s. I can let you keep going, but.
Okay.
You just said 60s and 70s. Is it the 1960s and 70s?
Oh, snap. This is the Civil War time. This is a. Oh, my God. Okay. This is brilliant. Well done, Justin Robert Young.
Here we go.
Okay.
That's because Andrew's sending us back to the 1760s and 70s.
No, it's got to be. It's Civil War time, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Wow. Nice recovery, Justin. Got us back on track. And they're receiving these checks to this day? What? Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, dude, I give up.
We're pretty much
all dead. Right, hold on. Can I just steer us in a direction and you say yes or no? Is this slavery related?
The Civil War is, but no, this is...
Okay, this is not specifically slavery related. Okay, all right, never mind then.
Okay, yes, go for it.
They had veterans benefits and widowers benefits that could go on to the children of soldiers, of veterans. And as long as the veterans, as long as they lived, whoever they married, that wife, and then could get the benefits, then pass the benefits on to their kids.
Oh my gosh.
So you had Civil War soldiers living up until the early 20th century, women marrying them, having kids, and there's still at least two children who are on paper, the children of Civil War veterans who are still collecting this. One of which is from Tennessee, which if you study your history, which side were they on?
Wow.
Not the right one.
And so after a period of time, they eventually extended benefits to the South as well. So you have somebody from North Carolina and somebody from Tennessee whose father, we presume their father, was in the Civil War. And they're still getting $876 a year for this.
Wow.
Dude, and by the way, big pimping to the Civil War, the soldier who's consecrating this hallowed ground so late in life with a young chippy wife.
Yeah, man. That's an interesting twist that it's actually being paid out to the rebels. Wow.
Yes.
So, but how old does this dude have to be? Like, how old is this dude when he's like, this is like a Hugh Hefner situation that he's,
Okay. So you figure he's fighting, maybe he's 18 in 1865 or whatever, right? War ends shortly thereafter. So, he's 15, right? So he's born in 1850. That means he's fathering children in 1900?
Let's say he fathers children for 75, up until he's 75, which you can go way past there. But let's say 1850 plus 75 is 1925.
Yeah, man, but he's old by then. He's
That's
old.
What I'm saying. The only 75? Way that this works yeah. is if he ain't shooting dry powder. Late yeah. life, baby.
No, that's a really good point. Wow. Yeah, so now it's definitely now is it a case where like maybe like he dies and then the wife gets the benefits because he's dead and then like she has someone younger and then like doesn't father someone until like the 30s or 40s.
It has to be the child of him. So if she remarries and they don't count.
Wow. So yeah, no, it has to be one of those
no.
That's crazy, man.
So when you think about the sequester, remember, not only are we already paying
go for, a long way.
Are we really paying for Star Trek videos the IRS can produce? We've also got at least we're paying the Civil War benefits to the child of a Southern Confederate Army member.
Man, that's huge. That is huge.
That's kind of just now, like I said, I had to read this thing twice to fully understand what the hell I was reading.
Was there a point where these kids were not the wife and the kids were not getting money? And also, I'm sorry, I'm hung up on this thing on how young was this chick when this dude knocked her up, and how old was this dude?
Well, it doesn't matter how young the chick is because it's the kid, right? So it's like she could be 30, 38.
And how old was this chick when she gave birth? That these kids are living a long time, man. These were built to last, built for tough.
Well, you figure if they were born in 1920. Then that's what 93 now, which is like that seems that's amazing, man.
I mean, but also like, you know, what is the average life expectancy just for a random dude, let alone a Civil War soldier in, you know, the 1850s? Like, you know, I doubt it was at, you know, 70. Like, I mean, that dude lived, he way outstripped his expectation there, right?
That's why there's two of them and not a bunch of them.
Yeah, there's not a whole community. We're down to two.
Oh, no, definitely. But, like, these guys were the outliers. Like, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and by liars, we mean they lied down on young ladies to boom, make
boom,
babies.
Boom. Hey, girl, you want to pack my cannon?
You're like, let me tell you how I lost this leg and grew a third one.
You got to imagine that somewhere there's somebody in accounting in government that sees this check every few years and they're like, what is this, you know, item, you know, payout 22B104. Like, what is this? And then they start going through books and they have to go through, it's not in the stack of books they have on that floor. So they go down into the basement. It's not in there. And then they're like, oh, I've got to go to a courthouse in Norfolk, Virginia or something. And you go there and you pull it out like, oh, the Civil War benefits program.
No, yeah, but before you get there, like, you have, like, the Civil War equivalent of the old knight, the Crusade knight from the Indiana Jones movie.
You must choose, but choose well. Otherwise, you get a check for a vasectomy surgery.
Yeah!
So I guess, like, what, I mean, I wonder when all of a sudden, like, those checks start showing up and they're like, oh, yeah, no, by the way, we just extended it to both sides of the war.
Like, well, at some point, you know, like six, I'm just going to guess. I'm going to make this whole thing up. I could see like the benefits being there from day one. And then like 50 years later of saying like, we're past the Civil War. My constituents in Tennessee deserve these benefits as well. They died just as hard as the other guys did. And then it gets grandfathered in.
I think imagine. It's pretty much exactly the way that works is you're like, wait, but you fought on the bad guy. Hey, listen, let's not.
It's like,
get
we're all
into
Americans now.
But then, so this is long after, like then these checks just randomly start showing up to this lady's house or these kids' house, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. There's like, they get a letter saying, well, we've restructured stuff and now you're part of this program. Enjoy free money forever.
Yeah. Although, by the way, like, kind of does sort of soil any argument against reparations. For those directly affected by that whole slavery thing, right?
Yeah.
We're like, we're finally extending the benefits to everybody that was affected by the Civil War.
Oh.
The Confederacy soldiers. And that's it. That's where it ends.
That noble sacrifice will finally be honored. Ugh. That has to be pretty freaking gross.
So, do we have a commercial or?
We certainly do. I'll tell you what, whole episode is bought out by Area 1851. I told you guys for the next couple weeks, we are going to be plugging this thing hard because he has made a commitment to the Weird Things podcast, and we are in turn going to give him his money's worth. All right. It's a Kickstarter. So let's go ahead. We're going to do a little update here. Area1851.com. That's all you have to do is just go to area1851.com. It's going to send you right to the Kickstarter. They got 21 days to go, and they've got $2,500 of their $25,000 goal. So they are on the way. They are on the long and dusty road, but I'll tell you what, this thing is amazing. I can go ahead and read. Let me just give you the real quick rundown here. It's the 1800s and aliens have landed in the Wild West, interrupting settlers on their way to Oregon. The aliens want genuine human artifacts and willingly trade dangerous technology for common household goods. A curious tribe of Native Americans have camped near the town and joined in the trading as aliens and humans begin tinkering with each other's gadgets, creating amusing contraptions and spectacular failures. Area 1851 is an exciting new tabletop game in which players roll dice, tinker with your gadget cards, and deal with random events while trying to prove that they are the best tinkerer in town. And by the way, you need to support this even just because it's International Tabletop Day, I believe, this Saturday.
Yeah. You know what? We should also hook him up with Will Wheaton, who does the tabletop show. He'd probably be in love with this idea.
That's a great idea.
Dude, definitely. We will definitely do whatever we can to make sure that this thing happens because he has come hard to the Weird Things audience and said, you want to know what? I believe that the like-minded people that will make my dream of an amazingly awesome, hilarious tabletop game a reality are listening right now. So if you are, go ahead and don't prove them wrong. Head on over to Area 1851. That is Area1851.com. And, don't take my word for it. Watch a Kickstarter video yourself. Pledge a few bucks. You've got some awesome perks here, which we will go through on a subsequent podcast. But go ahead and check them out yourself. Area 1851, A Tale of Cowboys and Aliens. And you know what I like about this one is that it's obviously an inventive idea with the Cowboys and Aliens. Well, like, you know, we saw the Cowboys and Aliens movie, or many didn't, as it bombed. But this isn't about fighting. This is about another element of that, which is really cool.
Yeah. Dude, I'm loving this. I'm loving it. And I'll definitely check it out. I must have missed when you guys talked about it last time, because this looks pretty dope.
Gentlemen, I've talked to Justin a little bit about this, and Brian, I don't know if you follow it on my Facebook or my Twitter feed. I've had quite an adventure recently.
Yes.
And I'm going to be journaling this up and submitting it to the appropriate research outlet, probably weirdthings.com, because they're the only ones that will publish me.
And also, they're the experts on whatever this is, I assume you're about to
tell us. Yes. Their review process is quite rigid, but I think I can get through it. So, friends of all of ours, Joke and Biagio, they have Joke Productions. They've been on NSFW show, great people. I was recently out in Los Angeles and talking to them about some stuff, and I noticed on the wall of their office, there was a sign. And I'd seen it months ago, and I remarked it to a friend, and then I was curious about this. And the sign said, Monkey Island. And then it said, 500 monkeys on the loose. You know, you can, you know, their own island, volcano, whatever. It's this description of Monkey Island, like monkeys on the loose, the volcanoes, and all this. And it sounded fascinating. I immediately turned to somebody there, my colleague, and I said, is this real? And we turned to one of the people in the office, and they said, no, we think somebody made that up. I'm like, oh.
Why is it?
Ripped my heart from my chest and just throw it on the ground. And I was devastated. Devastated, because when you hear the term, both of you, I say Monkey Island. Brian, what comes to mind?
I think of the LucasArts game, The Secret of Monkey Island.
Justin?
I would think of Monkey Ball And the video game Monkey Ball
like Super Monkey Ball, yeah.
Super Monkey Ball, yeah. And
there were islands on that, sure.
An island filled with that kind of chicanery.
So I think of, let's say, Skull Island from King Kong.
Yeah.
There's a variety of monkeys from there. And, but once I was devastated to find out this was just some Photoshop fake, not the first time in my life I would go through such professional
heartbreak,
it is. And so I ignored it, and I kind of figured, move on. There is no such thing. Because in my mind, it became a myth, like Lemuria or Atlantis or some other fabled place. About a week ago, I saw that sign again, the Monkey Island sign, and I said...
Mocking me.
And I said, I'm gonna read this to you. The monkeys in this unique simian zoo are separated from spectators by a wide moat containing clear circulating water, a protective device that is a masterpiece of engineering and design. Other descriptions detail volcanoes. Now, the address for this, okay, and there, by the way, 500 monkeys running loose, big bold letters, 500 monkeys running loose, no bars, no cages. They're so close you can almost touch them. Every day, performers by Monkey Island's famed high school troupe of chimpanzee movie stars. All right. Now, the address was in Kahanga Boulevard, okay? It was near Burbank. So I saw this, and I said, maybe there's something more to this. And I noticed something on the sign I hadn't paid too attention to before, and it mentioned an address which sounded a little bit archaic. It said, take red P.E. San Fernando Valley trolley. There's no trolley there. So I thought maybe there was a trolley once. I said, all right, let me pursue this. And so
do you have a date on what you're reading on this?
There was no date, Brian.
Okay, but it looked old,
nothing,
though.
I had nothing except for a sign with a lot of information.
Right.
And Google.
And a burning desire and a dream that only a young boy can dream.
Because you have to understand, what drove me was the address on the poster was the very address of where I was standing.
What?
Yes. That's what piqued my curiosity. I looked at the sign for Monkey Island. I read the address, and it said right where I was. Clearly, there were no monkeys.
In the joke production offices?
The building. The address for the building.
You had to ask Joe Biagio, what's the story on this poster, right?
Right. I asked Biagio, and Biagio said, I think somebody made it up or whatever, okay? So we thought that there was nothing to it. But I said, you know what? I'm not going to give up. I am not. I'm going to research the hell out of this thing. So I used a tool called Google.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
I type in Monkey Island, and the first thing I get is, of course, the fantastic LucasArts game. But then I type in, Monkey Island Burbank. And you know what I get? Nothing. You know why? It wasn't Burbank back then. It was Hollywood.
What?
Oh.
I type in Monkey Island, Hollywood, and then I add in Kahanga's in the Kahanga Canyon. Is also Kahanga, which was very famous. Tangerine Dream even did a song called Rolling Down Kahanga. I type in Kahanga. And what do I find but an article on the LAist about the very real Monkey Island?
So what was it? Was it like a theme park?
In the 1930s, a dreamer, a man by the name of we don't know, it's either Adolf or Louis Weiss, had a vision of monkeys running free on an island. He bought a bunch of monkeys, had them imported in the port of Los Angeles. It was the largest shipment of primates ever in the history of shipping primates.
Okay, awesome. So now, do we know how many? We're talking like hundreds?
500.
500. Half a G. All right.
500 monkeys were dropped or shipped into actually the Long Beach, okay, in 1938. Quote, the largest single collection of monkeys ever to arrive in America.
Now, when you say monkeys is like a generic term, right? It's not offensive to call them monkeys. They're not like, that's our word.
I think they accept that.
I
always get in trouble when I say, oh man, that's a cute monkey. And someone's like, oh, it's a chimp.
Yes, exactly. Right. This is a bonobo. Can you learn your apes?
I tell them, shut the hell up, and then I bite their face off.
you chew their nose and run away.
You want a chimp? I'll give you a chimp. Okay. So 500 chimpanzees, 500, excuse me, they weren't screw chimpanzees. They had some there, but he has 500 monkeys there. What he does is he makes, and he has 3 acres of property, now prime real estate. It's right, in a funny little side note here, but it's right in the middle of the Kahanga Valley. okay? He builds an island. He creates a moat around there and erects these volcanoes, these plastic volcanoes. They say plastic, which I guess meant plastic sheet or their fiberglass or whatever, volcanoes. Throws a bunch of monkeys on there, and you go there and you buy bags of peanuts and you throw them to the monkeys, and the monkeys just sort of sit there and watch you, and maybe they eat the peanuts. It was marketed as a place where celebrities would go, and so you could mingle with them while you stared at the monkeys, because the monkeys were the real stars.
And you're always separated by the moat. Like, they're not going to get across the moat or anything.
Now you're like, all right, how big of a deal was it? You're asking me rhetorically, I say. They had a neon sign there, which, quote, Monkey Island, Hollywood, California, has the largest animated neon sign west of Chicago, which tells you this was before Las Vegas.
Sure,
but anyhow, this was 1938. Now, the mystery is nobody knows what happened to Monkey Island. Monkey Island was a real place.
Wait, for real? There are articles about it.
There are stories about it.
Maybe those monkeys are living among us.
I mean, remember, this is an era where even news that was recorded in newspapers, you know, not many of these, you know, editions, you know, as papers fold and close and everything, things aren't kept right. You know, they're only printed on paper, so they dissolve and don't age well. So it's like, it's not even in a major city, a booming city that is of major cultural significance like Los Angeles, in an area that, by the way, if this is where the Joe Gambiaggio production office is right in the seat of entertainment power in the Los Angeles area, could be a race to history.
I'm going to drop a bombshell on you in a moment, all right?
All right, I'm getting
previously
ready now.
Unreleased, previously unknown, okay? And this is, you're going to hear it here first, folks, okay? But I'll give a little background. So the mystery, part of the mystery is what happened to these monkeys. Now, we find an account by a gentleman who talks about taking the trolley to go to Monkey Island when he was about 10 years old. Takes the trolley up there, goes to Monkey Island, and he said at this point, he says maybe it was 1938, 1939, it's kind of hazy. He sees these sort of very tired, emaciated-looking monkeys sitting there on the island, and they're kind of a little frustrated at that. And he talks to the guy who's the keeper there, and he says, so what happens when the moat's kind of dried up? He says, what happens when the moat dries? He says, oh, the monkeys leave. They don't come back. And you'll hear stories. They'll say, oh, yeah, the monkeys love to come back. This is where the food is. Well, when hard times hit Monkey Island, they didn't come back. And he points to some monkeys climbing in a nearby tree, right, outside of Monkey Island. So this guy's there. He gets kind of bored with Monkey Island. He looks on top of a hill. Hill, which is now part of Universal Studios Hollywood. Hill there. And you can see this hill now. He looks up on top of the hill, and he sees a ski slope. A ski slope. Okay? Like, but it's not snow. But what it is, they've got a lift where you pull the rope. It takes you up to the top.
Yeah.
He goes up there. They have a bunch of pine needles going down the side of the hill. People go up there. They hop on skis. They slide down there and go grab the rope, and has like a car tire spinning. This is like 1937, okay? This is probably not safe. He sits down on a tree, sits down under a tree to watch these people go down the hill, and something hits him in the head. Something else hits him in the head. He looks, and he sees acorns on the ground.
Right.
It's a little upset. He looks up in the trees, and he sees two monkeys throwing nuts at him.
Okay.
So the monkeys have escaped from Monkey Island, and now they're terrorizing people in and around that area.
Right.
Right. Now, I'm doing some additional research now, and I'm trying to find out, tracking down monkey sightings after that period. Because, you know, in South Florida, we have monkey colonies.
Yeah.
They're not indigenous here. Escaped monkey colonies. In Florida, actually, we have several of them. I haven't found it yet, but I'm curious to find out if there may have been a monkey colony. Because there's a lot of places for these monkeys to go off to. You've got to the north there. You start getting into areas where you have dense trees. You go further north in there. You have vast tracts of woods.
I saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I understand the danger we're talking about.
Danger are a new challenge. But anyhow, so you try to find out what happened to Monkey Island. It's not quite clear. Part of it is like trying to figure out, you know, what was the address? Did the address change? Whatever. And next to that office, there's a park. There's a wide open park that seems to have always been a park. And so some people think, okay, this was part of Monkey Island. And I was curious. I thought, are there remnants of Monkey Island still around there? And everybody will tell you
no. Can you go and see, like, you know, maybe the moat's gone, but you have this hill that's definitely like, that's it. That's the island.
It could be. So one of the things I thought to do is let me go outside, and when they put – there's some very tall buildings there, but one of the things they'll do is they'll sometimes try to keep the trees, some of the older trees. So I went and looked for the oldest trees. Now, this property, there's their building. There's a parking lot. The next to it is
now,
this
– real quick, just so my head's on right, we're talking actual, you know, heels on the ground investigations now. Yeah, you got your gumshoe hat on. You got like a spyglass in your tweed jacket.
Andrew Sam spading it up, man. He's out figuring out what the hell's going on.
I'm more Indiana Jones, but yeah. And so there's what's called El Paseo Cahengo Park, which is right next there. And so I figure that's a good place to look. Now, it's just a park. You say, it's just a park. Well, you know, what are you going to find? It's just grass. But you pointed out something very good, Brian. There could be, the moat could have been filled up, but there could be natural formations. I start looking for the oldest trees, the old trees, older than the buildings, older that could have been there for much longer. And I start to dig around there. Now, right in back of this property is the Hollywood Freeway. So you've got the Hollywood Freeway, and then you've got these properties. And you think, okay, there's nothing here. It's just been all rotted over. But I start looking through the gap, that space between the freeway and the buildings, and I look at the very old trees there. And I see some trees that I think would probably go back to that period of when Monkey Island was there, and some trees that seem a little bit unusual for that location, which would have been planted or brought in there.
Right.
And I'm going through, and I'm trying to find some trace, some proof that Monkey Island once existed. And I'm going into basically, I go through part of this area here, and it's a very narrow band, and I see somebody's clothes are laid out on a bush.
Okay.
At first, I got excited, and I thought perhaps I found some monkey squatters.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
Good old
monkey
squatters.
But it was a scary homeless guy in the black leather jacket who likes to give you the peace sign.
Right.
Okay. I decided not at that point to ask him if he had seen Monkey Island for fear that perhaps the question would not be understood very well.
Yeah, sure. Like, you want to see Monkey Island? He's like, I don't know that move, but you got 20 bucks.
All right. So I look through there, and there's through the chain link fence, I see some brush. I see some like very old trees, and I look there and I'm searching through there trying to think, what would somebody have missed? And then I see it. I see a form in the ground. And it's between the freeway and the park in an area that would not have been zoned for building anything in the last 40 or 50 years, most likely, which would mean that it was some sort of relic from before, because that property had been freeway property. And then whatever's on the other side of it would likely have been what was there before, which, to my knowledge, would only have been Monkey Island. And I find through there, it's hard to see it, but I'm going to show this to you guys here, and we'll describe to the people on audio, and we'll put this up on Weird Things when I do a recording. You can make out...
All right,
there's a squarish thing.
There's a chain link fence, and through the chain link fence, you can see what looks like some brush, maybe some, looks like maybe pine needles.
Yeah, but you see that rectangle there?
Yes, I do. I see the rectangle.
Kind of hard structure. The camera's not focusing.
That's all right though. I could enough that we could tell. There's like it's a concrete something or other.
Yeah, so it's a concrete structure.
Yeah.
Inside, on top of another, what looks like a concrete pad.
Right? Okay.
In the only logical explanation, when I said the only logical, the only explanation that I have enough information to make is I found Monkey Island. I'm just saying.
Now, okay, what's the link between, I mean, obviously you had some structure. Is it because it wasn't zoned for anything? And if anything was built there, it must have been part of this park?
You had, yeah, that's the only thing it would have been zoned for, because when the freeway would have expanded into that area, and we could, at some point, I'll do a record search, but what I found was, and it was by very, very old trees, which would imply that it's one of the oldest structures you'll find either. It's rotted away except for the concrete, which would imply this could have been a ticket booth, a bathroom, or some other part of what could have been Monkey Island.
Now, tell me honestly, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how high are your senses on monkey alert the whole time you're there looking? Like, just wondering, like, maybe two, because, you know, monkeys live a long time. Maybe two, you know, they all escaped, and then they're out there. Maybe a couple hook up. They just haven't been found yet.
I was this
close.
Maybe
a few of them are getting benefits from the federal government.
I was this close to calling one of the wildlife rescue people to say, have you ever had any monkey? And I will. That's going to be my next thing, is just to try to find out. I did like an LA Times horrible archive search, by the way, trying to find monkey sightings of any sort like that, to no avail. But at that period of time when they would have escaped, it was much less developed, and they could have gone on and escaped development to other areas, which is what's happened down here. So anyhow, I will be publishing what may be the first photos in this century of Monkey Island.
Of Monkey Island. And let me just point out to people, number one, the story that Andrew's telling, the heyday of Monkey Island was open over 20 years before Disneyland. That this is, you know, this predates Disneyland by two decades, as it was opened in 1955, July 17th. So this is, I mean, a world that It's so interesting that we find it fascinating in basically a prehistoric world for the attraction theme park, when really what we know of them today, as was kind of formed by the super theme parks like Disneyland and Six Flags and Universal Studios, what we understand to be those kind of attractions, this is before that. This is, the idea of, hey, what if we just put a bunch of monkeys on an island, a couple fake volcanoes? What are you going to do? Neon Boom. Sign out front.
If you do a search for, and again, we'll put this stuff up on the website. If you do a search for Monkey Island and then Hollywood, the first photo comes up as a Hollywood historic photo, and you see Monkey Island, and you have to get an idea of the scale. If you look in the lower corner of it, you'll see a guy with a long rod. Click images.
Yep, okay.
There you go, that one.
Yep.
Yeah. You'll see a guy with a long rod in a pan, and you'll see that he's actually – there's bunches. You'll see how big Monkey Island was. It's massive.
Yeah, no, it is definitely huge.
Like right behind the BB Brushwood logo here, you'll see the guy with the pith helmet.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah. So, oh my god, yes.
The lower left corner, you'll see that's a guy there, okay? And there's way on top of, look at the left peak.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. All of a sudden it got way bigger.
way on top of the left peak there, if you scan it down to the letterboxing, you'll see there's a little monkey up there.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, in back of there, the hills in back of there, that's where Universal Studios is now.
Look at that. It is. You can see it's a little friggin' monkey up there. That's amazing.
That was real.
So do we know what happened to this guy? Like,
it's hazy. It's one of my projects is going to be to track down more history of Monkey Island, but I was glad that I was actually able to find. Again, the structure, the parts I showed you, never been documented to my knowledge. There's been people who've gone by there, looked at Kahinga Park, looked around there and said, hey, there's nothing there, and looked at the hills there and thought maybe that was part of it, but nobody actually did a search. Granted, I had to fight off homeless people and scary things to go back there and get that photo, but it's what I do for you. It's what this show is all about.
You want to know what's funny is that there are parts of Animal Kingdom in Disney World that look strikingly like what we are looking at right now in this Monkey Island photo, and the idea of having just a big ornate sort of structure while these monkeys sort of run free. I mean, what an ahead of its time concept.
Yeah, dude.
Also hilariously unsafe, as it turns out.
Yes.
Wait, what do you mean? Are you seeing something?
Well, I mean, the fact that monkeys could just run away.
Well, yeah, there's that.
And also, listen, this is the hindsight of history. That now we know Los Angeles to be what Los Angeles is. And certainly the population for that city between now and 1933 has boomed. But the idea of now putting just a bunch of loose monkeys in the middle of that neighborhood, which is in and of itself now, a tourist destination with Universal Studios Hollywood.
This is basically my Black Dahlia mystery.
and rightfully so. I mean, a real mystery. And I'm looking forward to being updated not only on this podcast, but on the website itself on Weird Things, man. That is amazing.
My goal, gentlemen, is monkeys escaped. Those monkeys went somewhere. They either died off, or we may have had breeding pairs that made it off into the wilderness.
I mean, they're everywhere. They're all
Where is the legacy of Monkey Island now?
Show me the monkeys. That's what
Show
I'm saying.
Show me the monkeys.
I want to know where the monkeys at.
If you go look in look at a map of that and you zoom out, you'll see that you have Lake Hollywood Park. You have a very, very large area of just they could go to, and then further up, if they wanted to keep traveling, you get into there's the Wilderness Park, which is an area just they could be there and never would be seen again.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, a little question. It says Monkey Island ? This is where you were.
Yeah, that's not where it was. If you go to the map, the Google map.
Is this somebody? Wait, is this like your Moriarty? Is this your Belloc who you have to? Somebody else is looking for Monkey Island.
Somebody else looked at and then they researched it and it didn't match up to what it was. And if there's actual maps that show you where it is, it's incredibly believed to be the Kahinga location.
Give me a moment on this. Like, I just want to believe. just as you're the Indiana Jones out there finding the secret of Monkey Island, I want to believe there's some like corporate a-hole who's like out to exploit it and like reopen it. And you're like, it should be a museum. He's like, no, I'm going to bring more monkeys in. We're gonna reopen the Monkey Island. And it's like this race that you have to defeat him on.
Well, if you go to the interactive Google map, though.
Yep.
Right. And then if you start with where the location is and then you start zooming out, you start seeing places where monkeys could go to.
All right. Well, hold on. I'm clicking on it right now. Oops. Visit page. It's giving me trouble here. It's taking me to this guy's page, which I don't think is where I'm supposed to be.
The Google map. Oh, how do you go? Well, can you go back to the not that map, the other one,
let's see, when I go to images here.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go to the Thrillist article, or the LAist article, if you can find that in the, go to the web.
I'll see if I can find it, there we go, LAist.
Yeah, click on that, you'll see it's the second map down. Second image is that the Google map, which, you know. So if you zoom out of there, so you see the park, and that park is where I found, in the area between the park and the freeway is where I found the remnant structures.
Got it.
If you start to zoom out, you'll start to see there's a lot of other area, and then some of it's developed. But then, if look to the right,
you're just saying all of this turf might be infested.
Zoom out even further, and now there's a mountain lion right now in Griffith Park, which they thought, how could that get there? It's there.
As we zoom out there, understand people exactly how close that is to Universal City. You know,
it's across the street. The property is literally across the street.
Amazing.
Yeah. But you go up to the upper right corner, you see the Arcadia Wilderness Park, huge area. So entirely possible there could be a secret tribe of monkeys descended from Monkey Island.
So many monkeys.
And I want to make contact with them.
Your first contact? I've learned their ways. I will act as if I was born into them.
You can't reopen the park, Donovan. Well, Dr. Main, I disagree.
Do we have a time for a quick one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we should take a moment to thank our friends doing the Kickstarter for Area 1851.
It's 1851. Bought out the whole GD podcast. Everybody head on over there. Area1851.com, bringing you the nonstop Weird Things rock. And go ahead and thank them. Because I'll tell you what, you're not just giving money for the Weird Things podcast. If you support Area 1851, you're bringing yourself an amazing tabletop experience to reality. Area1851.com.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because we live in a time with so many different forms of narratives. And I'm a guy that I don't play as many video games as I would like to, and watching Bioshock Infinite is fantastic, amazing looking. I've got my wish list, one of the Bioshock novels, because I just want to tear into that universe. And then when you get into tabletop gaming and you think about the idea of how this person's laid out a narrative and your own adventure you're going to find, it reminds me of the George R. R. Martin talked about when he creates his Game of Thrones novels, how he has these characters and this sort of multi-layered sort of story going along and trying to figure out how they're going to interact and what's going to happen. And it's fascinating to see this when you get to step inside somebody's world and let them carry you along, and particularly where you get to make these choices.
Yeah.
And by the way, we'll talk about Bioshock because I think Brian's going to mention it, but let's just go ahead.
Spoiler alert. So,
Spoiler, sweetie.
I love it when I see an article and I go, oh, that's fascinating. But then that's all I can contribute to it because it's so beyond my ability to comprehend or understand.
All right.
Welcome to 19,000 articles that I've been forwarded by Andrew May.
So I just did a search today and I see this is cool. Another article about two more papers out about the speed of light may not be a constant.
This is so weird that you're mentioning this, because this goes directly to one of my picks later on. I won't say what the pick is just yet, but I was reading something about the alpha constant, which is like I'm going to screw it all up because I only listened to it and it was running earlier today. But it's about the it's that constant that makes elements and chemicals just durable enough that life work. Like if alpha was a little bit too much or a little bit too little, mm-hmm. it would screw everything up. But recently there have been people who have suggested that there's evidence that says that maybe alpha is not constant, and they were talking about that maybe gravity's not constant. Maybe one of the implications was if things are inconstant and they change over time, because as Einstein said, time and space are two sides of the same coin, then likewise, could it be that different regions of the universe have different constants in different areas? Anyway, what were you hearing about the
More papers that get into the idea of like maybe, you know, speed of light is not a constant. And as you point out, that as the universe expands, you know, time sort of runs a little bit differently for different parts of it. And you get into that idea that like, yeah, somewhere else the speed of light could be, you know, if we see it's not a constant, I mean, somewhere else the speed of light may not be the same that it is here, which is just, what does that mean? And I mean, I can't even wrap my head around that. And we can get into like, oh, you can't go faster than the speed of light, but then we will not, you know, but, you know, not locally, you know, and then you just get into these sort of weird sort of things. And I just wanted to say, wow, that's kind of cool. I have nothing to contribute other than.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, can we move into picks so I can tell why I'm reading what I'm reading? You want to talk picks? Because it's directly related to this idea.
Let's move into picks only if Brian can bring up something that's directly related to this.
Okay, so there's a book I'm reading right
and
now.
And go. Begin.
There's
We're
a book,
judging now.
There's a book I'm reading right now that
better
is,
make it relate.
Is sticking with me like no book.
Doesn't sound related yet.
This book is the most exciting thing I've read since The Rational Optimist, and it's in a totally different direction. It's called The Disappearing
Irrational
Spoon.
Pessimist.
Yeah, The Irrational Ass. It's called The Disappearing Spoon, and it's the stories behind each of the elements on the periodic table. And some of the stories are about the way these elements themselves act, as if, you know, maybe anthropomorphizing them a bit. Others are stories of their discovery and the petty jealousies of different scientists. There are some that you hear the stories of the Manhattan Project. You hear the stories of pranksterism with gallium, where people would take gallium because it melts at 86 degrees Fahrenheit. They would cast spoons out of gallium and then have some, you know, just set it out and wait for somebody to stir their tea with it. And then they'd all go kee-hee-hee when the spoon melted in there immediately. And one of the stories, if I may tie it into what we were just talking about, was the idea
Clock
of this
sticking by
this alpha constant. I'm forgetting who, but it was a famous scientist that we'd all know his name the moment I said it.
Dr. Spock.
Yes. Okay. Dr. Spock discovered an area.
Not Mr. Spock.
Or discovered because of an area. Let me back this up. The story goes that there is an area on planet Earth that is the only naturally occurring nuclear fission cascade. I want to say it's like Oklo or something like that. Are you familiar with this?
In Africa, yeah.
Yes. Okay. And so basically the way it works is there are three elements. There's uranium, there's water, and there's pond scum, basically, blue-green algae, right? And because the blue-green algae filters the water trickles down, and between the two, it essentially enriches the uranium in a pocket to where it hits a certain level, and there's just enough water to get things started to where fission actually starts occurring. And then and there's immense amount of heat, but because there's immense amount of heat, it is enough to burn off all the water. The water stops, the water being necessary to start, you know, to keep the cascade going, it stops. And then 50 years pass, and then conditions are right, and again it starts up again. And they found that the way they discovered all this, because it happened, like a million years ago, but the evidence is like when you have nuclear fission, you have a very predictable set of materials that are left behind, and they can only be created by fission. And so they go, and this scientist goes and looks at the materials that are there, and one of the things is missing. I want to say it's like selenium or something like that. That's probably wrong too, like everything else, but it's something that
Selena Kyle.
Exactly. Because this needed to be there, like there's no way to do fission and not create this. And then he, of all the ideas, he says, he just throws out there, well, what if the alpha constant, and I think whatever the number is, like one out of 137 or something like that, what if it was just a little bit off? And if you change this fundamental rule, you get exactly the results that we're seeing there. And again, there's a bunch of people who are arguing about it. And he goes in to talk about the philosophical implications for it, to where now there are entire groups of fundamentalists who are really working hard trying to do an experiment that would prove that, or do research that would prove that alpha changed. Because if alpha changed, then that means the speed of light can change. And if the speed of light can change, then that means the entire universe could be created 10,000 years ago. And so you have light moving really, really fast, but then now light slowed down, which is why it only looks like these billions of stars were created 10 billion years ago or whatever. It's fascinating stuff. And this is just one angle of one set of stories for one group of elements. He breaks down different groups of elements. It's amazing. Totally amazing.
I read the audiobook version. Really, it is. I can't remember anything from it other than I go, wow, it's a great science story, but it's great. If you go to the Wikipedia page and you look up natural nuclear fission, you will find about the articles about Oakland. I'll talk about the atomic fine structure constant, which is the phrase Brian and I would be grasping for, trying to figure out what the hell that was called. It gets into that, but also talks about something I did not know, that a plasma physicist was studying anomalies in gamma ray emissions from Mars and from the Mars Odyssey orbiter, and detected what he thinks may be pockets of radioactivity, which could have been natural reactors on Mars.
See, that's amazing, man.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Oklo in Gabon, Africa. It's fascinating stuff. And the guy, what I like about it is he takes a poetic bent on everything. And, you know, when you talk about one element being jealous of another one or of an element being tricky, I mean, there's a certain amount of poetry that you're just laying on top of stuff. But it makes it come alive in fascinating, fascinating ways.
Absolutely. That is the dissolving spoon. That is it is a great disappearing spoon, rather. It is a very, very good introduction into that. I mean, it's like you look at the periodic table and you're just like, boring or whatever. It's just kind of hard because it's just a bunch of numbers unless you have some sort of attachment to it. And there's Uncle Tungsten by Oliver Sacks, which is another one which gets into his love of chemistry.
As Justin mentioned, I haven't played it yet, but by all accounts, the reviews have been utterly exceptional for the new BioShock. BioShock Infinite appears to be trying to blend in brand new gameplay elements with a gorgeous, gorgeous vision for an alternate reality, 1912, with a floating city, and you have elements of Americana as a religion, mixed with this dark side need for immigrant labor, which brings issues of segregation.
Which I think what interested me most about the reviews that I read today was that number one, and by the praise for the game, it kind of obscures the onions that the creators of this game, which is a sequel to a very popular and very, very well received BioShock game, to go completely against the aesthetic of the first. I mean, except for the steampunk elements that the iconic villains are not necessarily there. It took onions to say, no, we're doing this whole other thing instead of just giving you that same adventure over and over again, which really there is no shame in. I mean, like Mass Effect gave you three Mass Effect chapters of the same characters in the same space war. This said, no, we're doing a whole different thing. They seem to have succeeded very, very wildly. And now that I have an Xbox in my house, I'm going to buy it and play it. It's going to be fun. And dude, finally, I can talk to Brian about video games.
And you know who else? Your friend of mine, Rabbit Badger, was saying that he was going to buy a console just so he could play this game. And I was like, well, I got an extra Xbox. So I actually just mailed off my Xbox to Rabbit Badger so he could play his game. Only because you didn't ask, Andrew.
No,
that
was very kind of you. I would love to, but I have this fear.
Yes, you can't break the seal on that. Your obsession will come out, it's not even a joke. This is not funny.
A poster for Monkey Island has me crawling through bushes trying to find a shred, a piece of concrete, anything.
Dude, I suggested pocket planes to Andrew, and he reacted as if I tried to hand him a crack pipe. Like,
oh, by the way, speaking of your suggestions, Justin, I finally played Ridiculous Fishing. I played it all the way to the end. I wanted there to be more. I was sad that it was kind of a weird, melancholy end to a game called Ridiculous Fishing.
It is. But, have you gotten all the fish through the maelstrom?
Almost all of them. I got to the part where, like, God sends you a fishing hat.
Yes. Well, yeah,
as
no,
he's prone
it's pretty
to do.
Dope. And I will just say I really I enjoyed the fact that there was an end, though.
Yes.
Like that it was an iOS game with an end and not just an infinite.
The end wasn't
new level coming soon.
Yes, exactly. The end wasn't for only a dollar more. You can skip blah 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 blah.
Yeah, and it built trust in that creator with me that the next time that they do Ridiculous Fishing 2 or anything else, I will buy it immediately for a similar price point.
Your pick? So,
yeah, I'll do mine really, really quick. It's not out yet. You can't buy it, but hopefully it will be out very, very soon. I read the script for the brand new issue of The Provider from your friend and mine, Brett Rounceville, who kickstarted the first issue. And I very, very, very much enjoyed it. So I don't know exactly where you can get the first issue of The Provider now, but support him and follow him at Amtrekker, AMTREKKER. Yeah. So he's great, and I love the new provider. So there's yeah. that.
Let me go grab my pick. Now, next week, I've been really into the Marvel Unlimited app, and there's some little things that frustrate you, like missing comics and stuff, but overall, it's awesome. Next week, I'll have some of the picks of the comics I'm reading on there. If you have an iPad, I highly recommend the Marvel Unlimited app, but that's not what I'm here to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Hold on a second.
Now he's running off camera.
Let me go downstairs.
This is huge.
I hope it's a binder of hand-scrawled notes, just crudely labeled Monkey Island.
I'll tell you what, it looks to me, I'm looking right now, if you want to see The Provider issue one, graphically.com, I guess you could download a PDF of it for only like $1.99. Look at that.
Yeah, no, get it in your life, man. It is, that's good, and I will say that the cliffhanger that the first issue leaves you on is briefly resolved in issue two, and then an even larger cliffhanger is introduced to you. So
awesome.
It is in great ripping yarn tradition, The Provider unfurls for you.
What do you
got? I found mine.
All right.
So I just got in the mail today a book.
Those are what?
I'm not here to talk about Night School and Printed Edition, though. That came in the mail. That's not what I'm getting into. No, hey, I had something
you know what? Hold that up to the camera real
Amazon.
Quick.
Forget Night School, which is available now for just $9.99 on Amazon.com. It can be shipped right to you, the print edition. No, that is not what I'm here to talk about. I am here to support somebody who I am a big fan of their work.
Oh, I know what this is. I'm excited, too. This is
you
awesome.
You should be excited. Do you have your copy yet?
No, I don't. I'm probably going to pick it up at Dragon Con and get it signed.
So Daniel Loxton, who is a fantastic illustrator, he's a great writer, he's involved in the skeptic community, works, does Junior Skeptic, talks a lot about, does a great job of communicating skeptic and science appreciation and critical thinking to kids and to adults as well. He has done, he's done several books, and this is his latest, it's brand new, it's called Pterosaurus Trouble, I like to pronounce the P, Pterosaurus Trouble, and it's a storybook, and it's about, you know, pterosaur.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Now, what's great about Daniel's illustrations and his artwork is these are not like off the shelf computer models. Okay.
Right. He composites everything himself. He puts that, and in fact, he did an article once breaking down how he makes these illustrations.
Genetics. He actually clones these from DNA that yes. doesn't exist.
He goes to Monkey Island and then has them just run amok, see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he makes these painstakingly. He goes to try to get the right amount of details, do as much as he can. He does great research. He puts them into naturalistic environments, tells a great story about these creatures. And so I love dinosaurs. Pterosaur's not technically a dinosaur, but when I say I love dinosaurs, everybody knows what I mean.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, say like an ankylosaur wasn't exactly a dinosaur either, right?
I like giant reptiles too. Okay, let me qualify that. I think we, you know, there you can, you want to get somebody upset, just, you know, tell somebody who's,
it's actually called a chimp.
start naming things that are not dinosaurs that lived during that period and say that you love dinosaurs. But anyhow, pterosaur, not a dinosaur, but nonetheless.
Well, we should say these are intended as children's books, right? But they're children's books that give a scientifically accurate account of what you know, this, I think, the, what was the first one? Was
what it, kind of trouble or? This pterosaur could really get into.
That's exactly right, actually. My daughter loved them. You got this whole appendix at the end talking about the evolutionary biology, that how this stuff happens. It was way good.
So it is. I'm sorry. I'm just reading some fascinated here. I'm watching two T-Rexes about to face off against each other.
Trouble.
And it's pretty awesome. Anyhow, that is my recommendation. That's by Daniel Loxton.
Loxton, super nice guy, really good guy.
Yeah, really, really good. Pterosaur Trouble. So get that. If you love anybody in your life, including yourself, who likes flying reptiles and other creatures, then I highly recommend it.
Let me also real quick add that the book that Andrew flashed before the Pterosaur Trouble tome is Night School, which Andrew was nice enough to take some time out of his weekend to sit down with me, and we did a nice little hour-long talk, which you can find on my YouTube, youtube.com/JustinRobertYoung, talking all about Night School, Andrew's books, what is happening going forward, and what it took to make this particular book, which is available not only as a physical book for $9.99, but also on ebook, as all of Andrew's works are. If you go to Amazon, iBooks, and all the other fine places where ebooks are sold.
Now, real quick, you mentioned, like, are all your books available in print versions for $9.99?
No, this is the first time. I first tried to do Grendel's Shadow, and I was upset with the formatting, and I just gave up because I'm a quitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally said, "Nice question. You know, it's a neat book, and I think you know, I've had several people tell me, oh, I'd like to read it, but I don't do digital, I don't do this." And I mock these people who tell me they want my, which is still stupid of me. But anyway, I said, you know, let me go ahead and take the time to do this and put it in a format to look good. So I did that, and I'm very happy the way it looked. I used CreateSpace for it. So.
Right on, dude. That's fantastic.
Now, gentlemen, it's been quite a discussion. We've gone from the Civil War to BioShock Infinite and to Monkey Island. It's been weird. It's been weird.
It's been so weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor. And you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.